We have a guest speaker today, Rabbi Tzvi Zimmerman, who is the Mashgiach Ruchani of the Beis Medrash and a Magid Shir for the high school at Skokie Yeshiva, Beis Medrash LaTorah. Rabbi Zimmerman also serves as the Associate Rav for Beis Chaim David in Lincolnwood. Previously, he was the co-founder of the Yeshiva program at Adas Yeshurim. Rabbi Zimmerman has spoken for numerous organizations and schools in Chicago, as well as many other cities. His Chumash Shiurim are a popular feature on TorahAnytime.com, and he has been giving them since 2001. His website, RabbiTzviZimmerman.com, has over 1,000 Shiurim on Chumash Navi, Chagim, Halacha, and Maser. Let's welcome Rabbi Zimmerman.
Whether or not that goes on doesn't really make that much of a difference. You can hear me fine? Everybody in the back? You're okay? Okay. I'm going to give a mashal, and this mashal will be, I'll just say it's not true, because my daughter is here. It's going to be about her. It has true parts to it, but it's a mashal, so it doesn't have to be true. It can just have basic ideas behind it. When my daughter was 6 years old on her birthday, she came up to me and she said, "Daddy, I want a car." Now, as a six-year-old, you go to a six-year-old and say, a six-year-old can't have a car. That makes a lot of sense. You can say that to a six-year-old kid and they can understand that. So that was a very easy no. That was a no. There's no way you're going to get a car at the age of six. But don't worry, honey. When the time comes, you're going to have a car. You're going to be able to drive and everything will be fine. This, my daughter, is a very persistent girl. So at seven, she still wanted a car. And she looked up at me with her big brown eyes that she does have. That's not a muscle. And she said to me, "Daddy, I really, really want a car." And I looked at her. And again, I said, "Honey, it's just not time yet." My heart could have melted because looking into her eyes, knowing that this is what she wanted, how could I say no? But I know that a seven-year-old driving is not a good idea. I think a seven-year-old driving is not a good idea. So I said no. 8, 9, 10, 11, the exact same thing on her birthday. She asked for the exact same thing. "Daddy, I just want a car. There's nothing else I want. Honey, I'm willing to get you anything. Anything you want. You want a doll? You want a new kitchen? You want something different? I can give you anything. But I can't give you a car. The car is just not possible." And now she's of the age where you can sort of explain it to her and you can say, "Listen, the evil government has decided that you have to be 16 years old to drive. It's not my fault. It's the government's fault. You should blame them and always despise the government. That's what you should do." And that's the reason why you don't have a car right now. But if it was up to me, I don't think it's a good thing for you to have a car. But the truth is that I've seen you in go-karts. And you're a horrible driver. I've seen you practice at the arcade. And you keep crashing into the wall or going backward. You're not a good driver. You have to understand that. But my daughter still looked at me, and again, with the eyes, "But I want a car." Now, when she turned 12, I figured, okay, so at 12 years old, she's already mature enough, she understands why she shouldn't have a car. So she's 12 now, she's bas mitzvah, it's everything there. So I say to her, "What would you like? You're 12 years old, now you're chayiv in mitzvos. What do you want?" My daughter says to me, "I want a car." And now, it's not just one time a day. She's doing it multiple times a day. And she says to me every single day, "I want a car, I want a car." And she keeps saying it over and over. Now this started to get a little annoying. Well, maybe I should give in. After all, I mean, if this is what she really wants, maybe I should get it for her just to keep it outside of the house so that she can see the car and she'll see it's there. And then at least she'll know what she's looking for, something that she's looking after. Maybe that makes sense. I know she's not ready because really she has to be a little bit older. And I get that and I know that. But maybe this is the best thing. But I said no. I said to myself, no. This isn't the right thing. I have to wait. Her birthday, though, was the worst. Every year from there, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th, every single year. It was all day long. All day long, all she was saying is begging me, getting down on her hands and knees and saying, please, Daddy, all I'm asking for is a car. I'm just asking for that. I'm not asking for anything else. Why can't you give me a car? And it's me saying, being that evil despot, saying, I'm really sorry. I just can't get you one yet. This isn't the time. It's not there. So at 15, my daughter realizes it's the last year. It's right before she turns 16. So she knows that this year is the big year. She starts going to the library. She starts studying up what it means to have a car. She practices what she has to do in order to do an oil change. Daddy, I'm not even asking you to go anywhere else. I'll be my own mechanic. And I'm taking care of it myself. She's looking up everything. She's going through everything. If there's anything she knows, it's cars. Everything about cars. She has a tremendous future ahead of her as a mechanic, because we know so many mechanics that are girls, and it's an amazing, amazing ability for her to keep going, and she learns so much about it. And finally, it culminates in the 16th birthday, where she turns to me and she says, Daddy, I want a car. And now, I'm also in a state. Is it the best thing for her to have a car? I'm not sure. It is her birthday. She is turning 16. She can drive. She did everything she was supposed to do. But I'm just not positive. Is it really safe out there? Is it really safe on the roads? Are 16-year-olds really supposed to be driving? Shouldn't it be 38 when you can start driving? Isn't that the age when they're mature enough and ready to go? Why is it 16? And if I give it to her now, is she mature enough to be able to take care of this car and know what she needs to do for it so that she doesn't ruin it? Because what's going to happen if she gets into, chas v'shalom, a car accident where she's not hurt? Chas v'shalom, that would happen. But where something else might happen, where she loses that car. And this is the car she's been hoping and praying for. Now what? What do you do? I'm just not sure. So I know it's time, but is it time for her to get that car? That's the mashal. The nimshal should be somewhat obvious to us. We are sitting there davening for a Kaddish Baruch Hu to bring back the Beis HaMikdash. And we say it in our Shemona Esrei and our Tefilos every single day. Once we become of age, we're bar and bas mitzvah, we start doing it multiple times a day. And in our Shemona Esrei, we say the words, although in Shemona Esrei there is no direct mention of the Beis HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim Erecha Barachamim Tashuv, V'sishkom B'socha Kasher Dibarta, you should bring us back, we should be in the area, but nothing direct about the Beis HaMikdash. But at the very end of our Shemona Esrei, when everything is said and done, Shibana Beis HaMikdash B'mherav Yemenu, we're asking for the Beis HaMikdash. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking at us. And he's saying, do you think you really get it? Do you get it? Are you of age? Are you able to treat this maturely? Are you able to be there in the right way? Is this the right time? And even if you think it's the right time, if you think it's the right time, do I think it's the right time? And if it's the wrong time, if something bad happens, then what? What do we do with? We've already been through two of them. And the second one, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, has a chiddush, which he says the second Beis HaMikdash they knew was temporary. There was no question in their minds it was temporary. They were planning on building Yecheskel's third Beis HaMikdash when Ezra came back. And Haggai, one of the Nevi'im, one of the Anshei Knesset Gedola, gets up and says, I just had a vision. It's not time yet. It's not time yet. We're not building the third Beis HaMikdash. It's not going to be 3,500 by 3,500 amos. It's going to be 180 by 157 amos. And the people were depressed. In Ezra Nehemiah, it says that the people were crying when they saw the Beis HaMikdash, because it was nothing like the first one. And their expectations of what the third one would be like, it didn't hit there. So they didn't know what to do with themselves. They were so sad. Because the realization hit them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them what they asked for. They got a Beis HaMikdash. It's what they've been davening for 70 years in Bavel. And it wasn't what they really wanted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu capitulated. The father gave in to them, but it was something according to what they deserved, and it wasn't as good as they knew they should have had. My wife knows a therapist who is very good in her profession. Not only my wife, I should say. My wife also knows someone else who is very good at her profession. Her name is Patience. Is that the greatest name? Well, for anything, but especially a therapist? That's an unbelievable name. Chazal tell us that Shema Garin, that the name of a person causes them to do certain things, to be a certain person, something that they are, it's from the name itself. And the truth is, there's a Gemara about this, that Remeir was Dayik Bishmalsein. He was Medayik. He was very, very, he intricately looked at every name. When he and a few Chachamim came to a certain inn, they saw the innkeeper, and the minhag back then, the custom was that you gave the innkeeper your money just in case. You never knew who was coming into your room at night. It was more like a hostel where the beds were all lined up next to each other. You're always afraid of somebody taking it, especially travel was not easy back then. They were exhausted. They were tired. You never knew what was going to happen. So you trusted your innkeeper. You trust the innkeeper. Remeir asked him what his name was, and he said, my name is Kidor. Kidor are the words, Kidor Tapuchos Hema, that is a generation that turns itself around. Said Remeir, this is not a good name. So the other two Chachamim gave their money to this innkeeper. Remeir himself took the money and put it instead by the Beis HaKvaros, by a cemetery, thinking nobody was going to take anything out of a cemetery. In the end, Remeir was right. The innkeeper did steal their money, pretended like he had never had it, and Remeir had to do a whole trick in order to get the money back. He did something in order to get everything back. But he told the Chachamim, he said, aren't you Medayik Bishmos? Didn't you look at the person's name? How could you not see? And it's true. Chazal tell us that our names represent who we are. At the end of our Shemona Esrei, there's a mimer in Shulchan Aruch that says that you should find your name, the way that it's spelled. My name is Tzvi Hirsch, so Tzvi, Tzadi, and a Yud. And you find a pasuk that starts with a Tzadik and ends with a Yud. And that's your pasuk, the pasuk that belongs to you. Mine is Tzaru Matzok Mitzuni Mitzosecha Shashuoi. Starts with a Tzadi, ends with a Yud. And that's who, that's what I represent. I represent that pasuk. That pasuk is me. That's who I am. And Chazal tell us that's the name of our neshama. That's what our neshama goes through. Our neshama understands what we are based on our names. Patience? Maybe she went through life thinking, if my parents name me Patience, I don't want people to come up to me and say, that's not very patient, Patience. And she decided she was going to be that person. As for me, I always thought that I was the fastest person in the world. And I was a fast kid. That I thought I was the fastest in the world because my name was Tzvi. And Tzvi means gazelle. So I always thought I was as fast as a gazelle. Whenever I didn't win a race, I always said, it's impossible. It can't be. I must have tripped on something. Because I'm a gazelle. I'm faster than everybody else, unless I met another Tzvi. Then that would be who I am. I was always afraid of a guy named Dove Bear. I was never really friends with a guy named Dave, because you never knew, you know? You could be alone in the room with them, but you know, these guys are tricky. You got to be careful with people like that to understand who these people are. So what does David mean? What is David HaMelech? That name of David, what does that stand for? David stands for what? So David has the letters. If you add on the Yud, as David's name is mentioned once in Tanakh, twice in the same pasuk, I think it's three times altogether. David has the same name, the same letters as Dodi. Ani le Dodi ve Dodi li. I am my beloved is to me. That's where the word David comes from. You know why? And it's so obvious if you think about it. David HaMelech's life is all about HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me no matter what. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is my father and will take care of me and give me whatever I need, whether I understand it or I don't understand it. He's going to give me what I know is best for me, whether I completely get it or whether I don't at all. David is Dodi. He is my beloved. He belongs to me. He is mine. And if that makes sense to us, then that should tell us everything about David HaMelech's life. There's a medrash in which even David HaMelech's birth was contested. Yishai, his father, was worried that he wasn't fully part of Klal Yisrael. He was from Rusa Moavia, and there was a big shaila in Klal Yisrael whether a Moavia woman was allowed to join Klal Yisrael. Boaz, David's great grandfather, had paskin that it was mutter. So Boaz married Rusa Moavia and had Oved, who had Yishai, who had David HaMelech. But there were shailas. And there were many other people who held otherwise. Shaul HaMelech was one of them. Shaul HaMelech questioned whether David HaMelech was allowed to join Klal Yisrael. Shaul HaMelech had no idea. And Shaul HaMelech even paskin, the Gemara shows from here, that we don't paskin like Shaul HaMelech. That Shaul HaMelech paskin that David HaMelech could not join Klal Yisrael. And for that reason, he was able to say, you can't marry my daughter Michal. And took Michal away from David. It was a psak from Shaul HaMelech. So Yishai was worried about this. Yishai, the great Rosh Yeshiva, who the Gemara says had 600,000 Talmidim. Yishai was a great, tremendous Talmid Chacham. He was worried. Am I really able to join Klal Yisrael? And he wasn't sure. And because of that, he said, I'm not sure if I'm fully Jewish. After he had already had 7 boys and 2 girls, he went up to a shifcha, his maidservant, and he said, I'm going to free you, and I'm going to marry you, so that I can have at least one child that may be mutter to me, that may be somebody that I'm allowed to marry. He didn't know, am I allowed to be together with my wife? His wife, Nitzeves Basadoel, who is a tremendous tzaddikas. Is this allowed or is this not allowed? He wasn't sure. The shifcha didn't know what to do. So the shifcha went to her master, to Nitzeves, and told her what was happening. And Nitzeves said, don't worry. I'll marry Yishai. I'll be the person there. You don't have to worry about anything. And Nitzeves and this shifcha made a ruse. They made a trick. The shifcha pretended she was pregnant. And Nitzeves pretended that she wasn't. And depending on the version of the Medrash, the shifcha gave birth to a child, but it was really Nitzeves. And they hid it from everybody else. And that child was David HaMelech. David HaMelech came out looking like not one of his brothers and sisters. Not one of them. He had red hair. He had a red beard. According to the Medrash, he was born with a red beard. It's brought down by Targum Yonas and Ben Uziel. Very strange, just like Esav. Although I will tell you, that's a contested Medrash. But David HaMelech came and was together with his brothers, and the brothers didn't accept him. They threw him out of the house. They said, you're not us. You're a Ben Shifcha. You're not a regular child. You belong to somebody else entirely. And David HaMelech's 30 years of his life, he was never among his brothers. He spent the time in the fields with the sheep and the goats, the sheep that he was taking care of. You would think there's no better reason to reject God than this. He was rejected by his brothers. Nobody loved him. His own father didn't know exactly who he was. The only person who knew was Nitzeves. But for 30 years, he sat in the fields. He sat with the sheep and the goats and everything there, and he made Tehillim, the beginnings of which we know is the Tehillim that we have today. He put together everything in the fields. He composed songs that he would use in the future for the Beis HaMikdash. He knew the Beis HaMikdash would eventually be built. And he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that these songs would be the songs that would be accepted as those that would be brought when the Korbanos were being brought in the Mizbeach. Isn't that amazing? Who does that? But not only that, it was so bad that the Navi tells us that when Shmuel and Navi came to Yishai, knowing that one of Yishai's children was going to be the one, the king of Klal Yisrael, after Shaul HaMelech had been rejected, one of these children, he sees Eliav, the oldest son of Yishai, a tremendous tzaddik, a tremendous Talmid Chacham, who was tremendously good looking, and he had everything that one would expect a king to have. And he said to himself, Shmuel HaNavi said, this is it. This is the king. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, not him. He once got angry at David HaMelech. He once got angry at his brother David. I rejected him. And in fact, the wording of the Navi is so strange. Ki ma'astihu, I despise him. I despise him. I don't want him to become king. How could such a person be king? And they went down the list. Each person, each one of the sons of Yishai. And each one was rejected for one reason or another. And he turns to Yishai and he says, do you have no other children? Can you imagine this? Shmuel and Avi is turning to Yishai and saying, do you have no other children? And Yishai says, I've got one other. At that moment, says the Medrash, Nitzeves Basadol stepped in and said, David is my child. And everybody's sitting there saying, what? David is your child? It's the Shifcha's child. It never was. I didn't want you to have that situation. I felt you were right in marrying a Bas Yisrael. I was there. It was me. It's my child. They bring in David HaMelech, and immediately Shmuel HaNavi says, this is the king. And what we say in Hallel, Odcha Hashem ki ani soni, I thank you Hashem because you have afflicted me. That's David HaMelech thanking God for becoming king. Think of the words, Evan Moasu Abonin. Haisa l'Rosh Pina. The Evan, the stone that was despised by the builders, became the cornerstone. The wording says the Gemara in Pesachim, Evan, the Ben, the child, Moasu HaBanim, that was despised by all the other children, by all of his brothers. Haisa l'Rosh Pina became the king. David HaMelech became king after being despised. He said it himself in front of everybody else. I was despised by everyone. But never forget exactly who he was. Is there anybody else like a David HaMelech? But that's not it. When he goes to the battlefield for the first time, Eliab turns to him and said, what are you doing here? You're just here to see the battle itself. You're not here for any other reason. You're just here to see the battle. Even after he's named king, Eliab doubts his intentions, his kavana. It's when he offers to fight Goliath because he feels somebody should do so, everybody laughs at him. They laugh at him. Is it you? You're going to fight Goliath? Who do you think you are? Even after he defeats Goliath, Shaul HaMelech turns to his second in command, Doeg HaAdomi, and he says, who is this kid? And Doeg says, don't ask me who he is. Ask me if he's Jewish. There's shilas about him. And Shaul HaMelech from that point on accepted him as his music player, but never really accepted him in Klal Yisrael. It's unbelievable. Even after he becomes the son-in-law of the king, Shaul HaMelech chases after him and tries to kill him for 6 months. Shaul HaMelech is running around from place to place. He's already been anointed as king. All he has to do is get up and say, I was anointed. Look at Shmuel. Ask Shmuel and Avi. And he has to run away for 6 months. His parents are killed by the Moavim after he trusts the Moavim to help him. They kill his parents. Yishai and Nitzavis are killed by the Moavim. And he has to continue running away. Even when Shaul's gone, it takes 7 years for the Jews to accept him. 7 years. He's sitting there waiting for them to make him king. And even then, Yehuda accepts him. The rest of the people don't accept him as king. And then even though his tzidkus is legendary, his chassidus is well known, his judgments are unbelievable, nonetheless, he does a mistake, one mistake, with Bathsheba and Uriah Chiti. And the people maligned him for the rest of his life. He did tshuva for it for every single day. The Gemara tells us that he blackened his teeth in prayer and tshuva. For the rest of his life, nonetheless, nothing. His greatest desire is to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's something he talks about over and over and over again. And in the Navi, he goes to Nasan and Navi and he says to Nasan, can I build the Beis HaMikdash? Are we ready? Is it time yet? I've gotten rid of all the enemies around us. I've taken care of all the different people around us. I'm ready now. It's peaceful. The times are filled with shalom. Can I please build the Beis HaMikdash? And Nasan and Navi tells him, yes. And then has a dream that night and goes to David the next morning and says, no, you can't do it. Why? Because you fought too many wars. But a king is supposed to fight wars and then build the Beis HaMikdash. That's a halacha. It's mentioned in the Rambam. Your hands are too bloodied. You can't do it. This is a man who wouldn't kill his mortal enemy, Shaul HaMelech. Wouldn't put a hand on him. Wouldn't say one thing. Wouldn't do anything that wasn't exactly according to the halacha of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. And this person is told he can't build the Beis HaMikdash. And what's his reaction? The reaction, if I would tell my kid after telling him yes and then saying no to him, do you know what my kid would say to me? What's wrong with you, Dad? What's wrong with you? Daddy, why would you do this to me? You shouldn't have told me yes. And the reaction that David HaMelech has is singing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, calling out loud songs to Hashem. Thank you, Hashem, for giving me a kingdom. Thank you, Hashem, for giving me children. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for saying no for me building the Beis HaMikdash. Is there anyone like David HaMelech? Is there anyone who has ever been like this? If that epitomizes what it means to be loved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what his name stands for, if that's what it is, I think we can understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there with us. For anyone that has, that's zocha to have children or grandchildren even, we all know that no sometimes means yes. And I found this in halacha all the time. See, I tell people all the time, they ask me, what's the difference between halacha and math? I said, in math, 2 + 2 is always 4. No matter what you do, you can manipulate it all you want. 2 + 2 is never 5. 2 + 2 is never 3. 2 + 2 is always 4. Always. But in halacha, 2 + 2 can sometimes be 5. tell you, 2 plus 2 can sometimes be 246. Because when it comes to halacha, there are ways of understanding it, nuances and ideas that go so deep, in which you think it's so simple. Look, this is what it's supposed to be, but it's not. That's not what it is. It really is something else entirely, a completely different idea. And when you start to understand halacha, when you start to understand how it works, you start realizing, wow, that's it. I remember when I was 21, I went to a posek and I said, Rebbe, how do you paskin? And he looked at me and he said, when you don't ask the question. If you're asking the question, how do you paskin? Then you don't get it yet. Paskining takes years and years of practice. You want to be a posek? Become 80 years old. When you're 80, then you can paskin. And that's the truth. That's the truth. It's so difficult because I can see how halacha goes one way, but then there's so many contradictions. So how do you deal with the contradictions? And that's exactly what a psak halacha is. And I think sometimes that's exactly the way it is with our children. We have to tell them no, but the no comes with a yes. They just have to understand how that no works, how that really means yes, what a yes means and what a no means. But isn't that what this month is all about? Isn't that the name of the month? We're sitting in the month of Av. That's the name of the month. It's called Father. And then this month, we went through the tzaros that we went through. The tzaros of the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed, not once, but twice, on the same date. That's our Father. Our Father's rejecting us. Our Father's taking our Beis HaMikdash and throwing it on the ground. He's taking the water that we give him and spilling it, throwing it right back at his face. That's our Father? The answer is, yeah, that's our Father. Because if anyone's taken a child to an inoculation before, holding him down in order for him to get this shot, the kid is thinking, Dad, you're doing this to me? I'm your child. This stranger is trying to punch me in the face. And you're doing what? You're holding me back? You're allowing me to get it? That makes no sense. Can you imagine a street fight where a father runs and he says, wait, wait, and then takes his kid, holds his arms behind him, says, just punch him. Punch him really, really hard. What father does such a thing? But isn't it obvious? Isn't it obvious that sometimes this is what we need in order to be healthy? Who represents this idea more than Rabbi Yekusiel Yehuda Halberstam, the Klausenberger Rebbe? Klausenberger Rebbe, if you read about him, every single word you see is gold. Gold. Everything he did, I can't imagine that there's something in this world that the Klausenberger Rebbe did that somebody argued with. I can't imagine it. The stories are crazy, absolute crazy stories. We know he was in the Holocaust. We know he was in Auschwitz. We know what he went through in the DP camps. The stories that he gave, what he gave, how much he gave of himself to other people. I'm going to quote from the new book about the Klausenberger Rebbe that just came out. By the Sheva Brachos of his oldest son after the Holocaust, this is Reb Tzvi Elimelech, he said the following. He said, many times I thought to myself and contemplated how the Creator has bestowed his mercy upon me after all the suffering that I experienced. I've merited to rebuild anew. I've been blessed with sons and sons-in-law who are Torah scholars. He had 11 children before the Holocaust who all perished. He had 7 sons and daughters after the Holocaust. I've merited to establish a beautiful yeshiva that blossoms with Torah leaders in Yerushalayim and so much more. I stand in amazement and wonder, what good thing did I do that pleases the Almighty and caused him to bless me so? What I've reached the conclusion, he said, that the only thing I possibly could have done to merit all this is that even in the most difficult times I had, I never once had a complaint against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, with every wave that passed over me, threatening to drown me, I bowed my head and accepted it with love. How does a person do that? If not practice, practice, practice. It's beyond one's contemplation. But Rav Halberstam understood, this is my father. And if this is my father, it's all meant for love for me. I don't understand it. I'm a little kid. I'm a four-year-old kid. How am I supposed to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for me, what Hashem does for me, what my father does for me? I'm not supposed to. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And that's the true message of Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis of David. You ever read this? I wrote up a translation of Pesukei Dezimra for my boys in yeshiva because I don't feel that there's any sitter that translates Pesukei Dezimra well. Art Scroll writes it for somebody who's 75 and a professor somewhere. I believe the Mitsuda writes it over for somebody who lived in 1843 England. And everybody else is sort of writing it. What's this prayer? What is this? Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis LaDavid. It's a song for the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash made by David HaMelech. Great. So it's going to be about the Beis HaMikdash. It's written at the dedication, so it's got to be about the Beis HaMikdash. I thank you, Hashem, because you have lifted me up. My enemies have never been happy about destroying me. Hashem, my God, I pray to you. You have healed me. Hashem, you have brought me out from the depths of the grave. You have let me live among those who have gone down to the pit. All of his chassidim sing to him. They thank his holy remembrance. I said in my peace and tranquility, I never want to fail. I never want to fail ever. Hashem, with your will, you stood me up. You brought me up to the biggest strength. You've hidden your face from me at times, and I was scared. To you, Hashem, I davened at that point. To Hashem, I gave all my prayers. Because what profit do you get with my blood? If I go to the grave, will my dirt thank you? Will it tell the truth of everything you're doing in this world? Hashem, listen to me. Grant me what I need. Be the salvation, the help that I'm looking for. You've once turned my sackcloth into happiness. You took everything that I had. You made it into something good. So that my soul should sing and never stop. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I will always thank you. Did anybody hear anything about the Beis HaMikdash there? Was there one mention about building the Beis HaMikdash? It's David Melech's life. David Melech's life is encapsulated within these words. And that's what he felt. Because truthfully, the Beis HaMikdash to us should be like our own body. It should be all about us. What are our lives all about? We're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting to get that answer. We're seeing what we should do. No matter what age we are, we're always wondering about what's going to be 5 years from now. Where am I going to be? Where are my kids going to be? Where's my family going to be? What am I going to be like? What's going to be with everything I have? We always wonder such things. And we look at the past, and sometimes there are some hard things that we went through. There are some hardships that we had. There was pain. There was suffering. David HaMelech takes a look at everything that he saw, and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything was for my own good. There is no better way to look at the Beis HaMikdash as a whole. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Beis HaMikdash is for my own good. If it's the time for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt, then rebuild it now. And if it's not, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, show me the way to get there. Let it be that this Tisha B'Av, we're not sitting there. Oh, this year we don't have the eggs and ashes. We're not sitting there waiting, sitting on these tiny little egg crates, waiting for Mashiach to come. Let it be that we're sitting in Yerushalayim by the Beis HaMikdash, watching it become a moed in front of our very eyes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let Tu B'Av, the 15th above, take the place of Tisha B'Av and allow it to be filled with simcha, filled with happiness. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if it's not the right time, you're in charge. And I accept everything you do with pure love. That's what Mizmor Shir means. If it's the time for the Beis HaMikdash to be built, through me, says David HaMelech. If I'm the one who's supposed to build it, great! This is what I've been waiting for. I've saved my money for this. I've done everything for this. And if not, I'm fine with it. Let it be by somebody else. Let it be in the way that you wanted a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I don't want to force your hand. It's a beautiful message. And it's the way we start off our Pesukei Dezimra. Understanding that everything we have, everything we own, is truly because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have it and needs us to have it to be the best that we can be. And that is the takeaway from these 9 days. In my mind, the whole 9 days are about understanding what it means to have a father. What it means for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be our father. That he loves us the same way no matter what happens, no matter what we do. Our father always takes care of us. And even though sometimes there needs to be a patch. Because I ran into the street without looking both ways. Sometimes that needs to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always, always there for us. And if we understand that, or even begin to understand what it means to have a father who cares for us so much, then sometimes the challenge becomes a lot easier. It becomes a challenge of just understanding this Tisha B'Av leads me up to the greatest Tisha B'Av that will be of all time. Is this a time of sadness? Of course, it's a time of sadness. But it's a time of joy, of recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost here. He's coming. He's coming. Our Father is going to tell us everything we need. He's going to help us. We're just waiting for that final, final message that he can give us. Thank you so much for having me. Have a great rest of your day and a very meaningful Tisha B'Av.